noon tomorrow. Call now, 1-888-805-6477, or buy them online at nhpr.org.
Support for The Exchange Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is made possible by Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, and here are some of the voices from this week's top news stories.
We want to see a sense of urgency from the governor's office if Governor Hassan would encourage these departments to move forward and to protect patients rather than delaying this process indefinitely.
So, Androscoggin Valley, Weeks Memorial in Lancaster, Littleton Regional Healthcare, and Upper Connecticut Valley Hospital in Colebrook plan to form an umbrella parent organization. It will explore ways to cooperate to provide good health care and reduce costs.
While we're not happy about what happened, I think that the chief and the board of selectmen and myself as manager feel that we've shown that this type of conduct will not be tolerated in the town of Seabrook.
This law stacks the deck against candidates who don't belong to a major party and really protects major parties from competition and prevents voters from being presented with alternative choice.
You know, he really makes us feel appreciated. He'll come into the stores. He knows a lot of our names. You know, he'll come up to us and shake our hand, tell us we're doing a great job, you know.
From the top, that was Matt Simon from the Marijuana Policy Project, saying that on the first anniversary of the state's medical marijuana law, he's frustrated with slow implementation. NHPR's Chris Jensen reporting on a new North Country Hospital Consortium aimed at improving efficiency and lowering cost. William Manzi, Seabrook town manager on the recent firing of two local police officers after charges of brutality. Attorney Gilles Bissonnette of the New Hampshire ACLU outlining its lawsuit to restore more time for third-party candidates to collect ballot access signatures. And finally, a Market Basket employee named Sam, who called into The Exchange yesterday on why she and her colleagues want former President Arthur T. Demoulas reinstated. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange, and let's hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests for this week's Roundup are Joanne McKenzie. She's New Hampshire editor for the Eagle Tribune and editor of the Derry News. And Joanne, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thanks, Laura. Good morning.
Also with us, Kathleen Ronayne, reporter for the Concord Monitor. Kathleen, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, thanks as always for your time.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, all of you, let's start with those kids count rankings. New Hampshire, we were told this week, slipped from number one to number four in something called the kids count rankings. So, Dean, who does these assessments? Who's saying you're number one, you're number two, you're number three? Your number four?
Yeah, this is a survey that's been around for a little while now, and it basically looks at a number of, it's literally called the Kids Count Survey, and it looks at a number of different indicators to try to gauge where children have the best opportunities for being raised, best quality of life, best health care, et cetera. And New Hampshire has been number one for a long time, but it's now slipped to number four behind Massachusetts, Vermont, and Iowa. Interesting. Mostly New England with the exception of Iowa. Still 4 out of 50 is still a very good ranking, but it based that drop on two factors, the increased number of children living in poverty in the state and the percentage of children with parents without secure employment. So, we've talked a lot about the whole issue of job security and income inequality as a big political issue. And sure enough, within moments of this study being released, Democrats were saying that in the state were saying that this is because of budget cuts by Bill O'Brien back when he was Speaker of the state legislature, and Republicans are saying that this is a function of Maggie Hassan's poor stewardship of the state economy. So, this is kind of more fodder for the political mill going into November. But yeah, I mean, we're still fourth, but we have been number one for a number of years.
Yeah, Kathleen, go ahead.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting is how much of a political football this came. When you're talking, I mean, yeah, we are still number four, but when you're talking about something like child poverty going up, that's a pretty serious issue. Yet everything that we were seeing was this blame game on whose fault it is, rather than let's talk about this issue and figure out why it's happening. So I thought that was very interesting because to me, as you know, as a resident of New Hampshire, that's concerning that we're having more and more children growing up in poverty, and I want to know why that's happening, and I want to see people working to tackle it, I think. So it was expected, but also, it you know, interesting that this immediately turned into, let's see who we can blame it on politically.
Well, we're not that far out from the election. So, yeah, and digging into the numbers, though, a little bit more, Joanne, as Dean said, one of the leading factors why New Hampshire slipped on this was our increase in child poverty from a 9% child poverty rate to 16%, Joanne. That's a lot. What was the conversation sort of about why that's the case?
I think general economic conditions. I also think we need to look at why Massachusetts bumped up to number one. And one of their the big factors there was that 99% of children in Massachusetts now have access to health insurance, which gave them an increase and cost New Hampshire some points. I think, again, if you're in the top five, you're doing pretty well. I agree that we need to look at why those numbers dropped. And child advocates in both states said even if they were one and two, no matter where they are, we shouldn't become complacent about this. This is something we need to look at all the time, how well we're taking care of our children, whatever state we're in.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Joanne, you're on the border there, New Hampshire editor for the Eagle Tribune. So you cover both states. Was there any sort of crowing in Massachusetts about, you know, hey, we bumped you guys off of your top slot?
Minor crowing, not a lot of crowing. No, I would say not. I would say most people in Massachusetts said, great that we're number one. We still have work to do.
Our phone number here in the exchange for you to join our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is 1-800-892-6477. Join us as we cover some of the big stories of the week. And even though it's midsummer, there has been a lot going on in the Granite State. By the way, while we're covering the news, I want to remind you that Saturday is the deadline to get in on the early bird portion of NHPR's summer car raffle. So get your tickets now at nhpr.org. The number for you to join our conversation right now is 1-800-892-6477. Another big story this week, Kathleen Ronan, I'll turn to you first. Supporters of New Hampshire's one-year-old medical marijuana law held a not-so-happy birthday party this week. What are they upset about?
What they're upset about is that the rules for how the medical marijuana law is going to be put in place still have not been worked out. So usually what happens with complicated laws like this, the legislature passes the law, governor signs it, but then they have to work out the rules that tells us exactly how we're going to implement the law. And it's been a lengthy process to do this for medical marijuana. So we're starting to see advocates get frustrated because they're saying this passed a year ago and we have people who we think need to take advantage of this law. We want to see this move quickly. And I think there's frustration. Maybe the government, the state government is dragging its feet a little bit. And how much longer is this going to take until this law is actually in place? Because, you know, from the advocates' point of view, there are people who need this and who have been waiting for a way to use medical marijuana legally. People who are saying, I have the right now that I should be able to do this, but there's still no legal channel in place for me to actually, you know, use medical marijuana, obtain medical marijuana. So definitely some frustration. And I think, you know, we'll see if the 1 year anniversary is, you know, prompting the lawmakers and the rules committee to work any faster.
So they're in this sort of weird state, Kathleen, where on the books, it's legal if you have certain conditions to use marijuana to relieve your symptoms. That's on the books. But in practice, there's not the mechanisms for you to do that, and it's still illegal. That's what Matt Simon seemed to be saying, that, you know, you get in trouble if you did this, even though it's legal.
I'm not sure exactly what the punishments would be, but there are no rules in place for how you do this yet, you know, where you get the marijuana, who can help you with the marijuana, like who can administer it, I guess, if you're right. not taking it yourself. So a lot of complicated pieces to this that there are no proper channels in place right now. So again, I don't know exactly. I haven't been following it closely enough to know what the penalties would be. But yeah, it is this weird kind of limbo state right now for people who want to take advantage of this law.
Dean?
Yeah, you know, the issue here is the ability to grow at home. This was a concern back when they were discussing the legislation, was Governor Hassan wanted the grow your own option taken out because the law enforcement community said there would be a lot of enforcement problems. So the concern is people who need this want to start growing their own, but they're worried that they're going to be, you know, in trouble with the law in doing so. So this is, I recall back when we were discussing this in the legislature, when we were discussing the debate over in the legislature, this issue of timeliness, ability to get it when you need it was a concern. And there was some concern that having these dispensaries rather than letting people grow a small amount at home would lead to precisely this problem. And now there's concern that people need it and they can't get it and they should be able to grow it at home if they need it.
All right. Well, and one more big news item that caught our attention and I think the attention of everyone in the state. Joanne, I'm going to turn to you. Market Basket, the mess with this company, boycotts, protests, petitions, state lawmakers getting involved. We did a whole program yesterday updating this Market Basket situation, Joanne, and our phone lines were flooded. What's the latest as of today? Where does this stand, Joanne?
Well, right now there are thousands of Market Basket workers and employees gathered in Tewksbury at what some of them build their biggest and final rally, calling for Arthur T. Demoulas's reinstatement as CEO and president. At the same time, the Market Basket Board of Directors is meeting in Boston. They were supposed to meet at 4. They switched that to 9. Not sure whether there was any political maneuvering in timing it to coincide with the Market Basket employee rally this morning. But, you know, the latest is Arthur T. has made an offer to buy cousin Arthur S. and company's share of the company and take ownership. I think employees don't care which way that plays out. If it plays out one of those two ways, either he takes full ownership or he's reinstated as CEO and president. But this is one of the wildest stories I can remember in 20 years. The Londonderry Market Basket manager, whom I had coffee with yesterday, he's a 37-year Market Basket employee.
Wow.
Said, you know, this is historic, and he's absolutely correct. This is a story that's going to be taught in business schools for years to come, where non-unionized employees of a corporation rise up and say, no. We're not going to accept this. Another quote from him I loved was, "They thought we were sheep. Turns out we were sheep with teeth."
Well, it's been a fascinating story. And a couple people on our show yesterday said this is going to end up in the Harvard Business School list of case studies for many years to come. We will take a short break for our summer car raffle. And when we come back, a national Republican figure comes to the Granite State launching a new effort aimed at improving the GOP's profile among women voters. So we'll find out more about that in just a moment. Stay with us. Let's check in now with our summer car raffle.
NHPR is NPR News. NHPR is also good companionship and also keeps you abreast of what's unfolding in this Market Basket story that persists in our local attention. Maybe that's why you listen. We are here when you want us, and that is thanks to listener support. You can show your support right now by picking up a couple of raffle tickets during the early bird portion of our summer car raffle. Call us at 1-888-805-6477 or visit nhpr.org. Virginia Prescott here with Sam Evans-Brown.
We're all looking to reduce what we spend on gas. NHPR's annual raffle has a couple of prizes that might help you out with that. When you buy your tickets today, you get $2,000 in gas gift cards with Irving Oil. That's our early bird prize. It's a great way to reduce the amount of money you spend on gas. But whether you win that or not, you're still eligible to win a new car, and you could pick out something that's going to reduce what you use. Or, of course, you could win the Trek bicycle, which you could take and burns no gas whatsoever. Whatever prize you win, it's going to reduce your gas budget. So get your tickets at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477.
Supporting NHPR today is one of the best things that you can do with just 2 minutes of your time, and that's all it takes. Just provide your name and your contact information, your credit card. Tell us how many raffle tickets you'd like to buy, because, of course, the more you buy, the more chances you have. You put your name in the hat to win some prizes, and your financial support becomes stories and programs that continue to keep you connected to the world and to your state and to your community, all in just 2 minutes. Get your tickets now, 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org.
Thanks to your support of NHPR, we can give these complex news stories that are happening all around us right now, like this market basket strike, which the last guest pointed out is going to be taught in business classes for years to come. We can give those stories the time, the space they need. We can follow them. We can bring you information on the various complexities and nuances about them. Most TV and cable news outlets and part of the bigger media conglomerates, they just don't do that. They're in business to make money. But for us as a nonprofit public service radio station, NHPR is in the news business, but we're here to serve you. So support that news service by purchasing your NHPR summer car raffle tickets now. Call in 1-888-805-6477 or head over to our website, nhpr.org.
Now we're going to return to the exchange in just a couple of minutes. It's the Friday News Roundtable. It's one of the most popular exchange programs. People love it. Catch up on the news. Coming up, I'm sure they'll be talking about Abigail Hernandez has returned to her home. Carly Fiorina, a national Republican, was in New Hampshire last night, and she's got a super PAC working on behalf of that super PAC to promote GOP candidates. But first, please take 2 minutes to make sure that programs just like this, all the NHPR programs that you depend on, stay on the radio. You can support the programs that you rely on and get yourself a terrific chance. In fact, 5 chances. To win some kind of prize from the NHPR Summer Car Raffle, 1-888-805-6477, or take a look at all of those prizes and get your tickets online at nhpr.org.
If you had $2,000 in gasoline at your disposal this summer, where would you go? Depending on your car.
We were trying to figure this out.
Well, we're pretty sure that you could pretty easily make it all the way from Newfoundland and Labrador down to Ushuaia, Argentina, on the southern tip of South America. But of course, Google Maps failed us, so we're not quite sure. We'll be back to you with more on that in the next break. So you can go pretty far on 11,000 miles worth of gas. You could make it all the way across the country and back. So it's just $50 or three for $100 for your raffle tickets. And think of all the places you could go. Call in 1-888-805-6477 or head over to nhpr.org to get your tickets.
But no traveling if you don't win, and no winning without a raffle ticket. If getting your tickets is on your to-do list today, do it now. 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org. The deadline is noon tomorrow. Get them now. 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org.
Checking New Hampshire weather, partly to mostly sunny for today. Some isolated showers this afternoon in northern Coos County. Highs mid-70s north, ranging mid-80s in the south. Mostly clear tonight, some areas of fog after midnight. Lows around 50 in the north country, mid-50s to lower 60s in the rest of the state. Then tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny, with highs upper 70s to mid-80s. Showers and thunderstorms likely Sunday. It'll be humid. Highs mid-70s to lower 80s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank, providing complete business banking services to small to medium-sized businesses in New Hampshire. Information at centrixbank.com. And Birchill Terrace, a not-for-profit continuing care retirement community offering independent living, assisted living, and nursing care in Manchester. Birchillterrace.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, and let's turn now to the midterm elections. Carly Fiorina came all the way from California to the Granite State this week with a message for her Republican Party.
Women voters are going to make the difference this year. We know it. Now more than ever, we need to revive our party and help more women understand why our policies can help improve their lives and rebuild America.
As NHPR's Josh Rogers reported, Fiorina has a PAC toward that end called UP, focusing on women voters in five other swing states: Iowa, North Carolina, Michigan, Virginia, Colorado. Dean Spiliotis, fill us in on this a little bit. Who is Carly Fiorina?
Carly Fiorina is a former CEO of Hewlett-Packard. She's been a very visible figure in Republican politics, business for a long time now. She's a commentator on television, a lot of different networks. I see her quite frequently talking about elections and the economy. You know, here she's addressing what we typically refer to in political science as the gender gap. And it's the idea that typically in elections, Democrats seem to outpoll Republicans roughly 10%, 12 percentage points, depending on the election. It varies a little bit. But the idea is that Republicans have in recent decades had trouble attracting women voters. They typically do better with married women voters than they do with other groups of women voters. Her PAC, this PAC UP, is attempting to address the gender gap. And also this idea, you know, Democrats have argued that Republicans have waged a war on women, and Democrats have won that on a social dimension for a long time, talking about birth control, abortion rights, health care. They've done quite well with women on those issues. Fiorina is trying to make it sort of an economic argument as well, that the Republican Party holds more economic opportunity for women. So she's been quite outspoken on this, is trying to do grassroots organizing, retail politics and voter outreach to try to close that gender gap a bit. It's been tough for Republicans in recent elections. You know, they argue that this war on women is not a real war. It's just a sort of rhetorical device that Democrats have used. Democrats would say they just consistently have better positions for women on these social issues. So she's really, you know, there's only so much she can say about that. But she is trying to recast a lot of it as kind of an argument about economic opportunity and the GOP as a place where women can find that opportunity.
Yeah, and it's interesting that she's picked New Hampshire and five other states. So just a handful of so-called swing states.
This is a big swing states, right? And it's obviously important for, you know, she tends to work nationally, and the swing states are going to be important in 2016, just in the way that they were in 2012 and 2008. So is the case that New Hampshire is one of these swing states, or purple states, as we call them. So we get a lot of this kind of attention, and she's one more example of that.
Well, it makes things interesting. And Kathleen, you know, what about in New Hampshire then? How much trouble or not has the Republican Party had with women voters in the Granite State?
Well, I think that the dynamic that Dean is talking about, first of all, in terms of Democrats focusing on issues like abortion rights, birth control, whereas Republicans are trying to recast it as an economic argument, we're seeing that here in New Hampshire as well. The Democratic and Republican state parties are really focusing that way. And I think that, you know, we already see in some recent polling that Jean Shaheen has a major edge over Scott Brown when it comes to women voters. I think that Jean Shaheen has always done really well with women in New Hampshire. You know, as we've talked about, she's a well-known figure. Scott Brown, someone who's new, and they've really been hammering him on the Hobby Lobby decision specifically. So that's been a big rallying cry for Democrats. We've seen the Democratic Party here in New Hampshire, they've been doing, just this week, they did a women-to-women phone bank. They did one last week with Terry Norelli and the Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the chair of the DNC. So focusing on women, reaching out to other women, talking about why Democrats are the better party on things like birth control, abortion rights. Their argument is they're the better party. But we've also seen Jennifer Horne, chairman of the state Republican Party, hitting back a little bit and making that economic argument. She's had some op-eds out about how by voting for the health care law, which, you know, Republicans say took away health insurance from people, limited access to your hospital, your doctor. So by voting for that, you know, Jean Shaheen is hurting women in New Hampshire who might have been affected by that. And also the broad economic argument. You know, we are the party, Republicans say, that is better for creating jobs, for creating economic opportunity, and that lifts everyone, including women. So I think that national argument Dean's talking about, we're seeing it play out right here. Women are going to be a target in this race. I think that if Brown is not able to gain some traction, more traction among women, it's going to be very difficult for him to beat Jean Shaheen, because she has a very significant edge over him right now.
Well, it makes it real interesting. And it was very interesting that, you know, here we have this national figure coming into New Hampshire to try to revive women voters, to encourage them to vote Republican. More political activity
activity this week, folks, in the Granite State as well. This week, Republican candidates in that first congressional district race debated, an event sponsored by WGIR Radio, and I want to recognize them for that. I want to play a bit from the debate where the candidates talk about where transportation funding would fit among their priorities, how they'd approach it. These candidates have different approaches, as you'll hear. First, we'll hear from former Congressman Frank Ginta, and then right away, jumping in, we'll hear from former UNH Business School Dean Dan Innes.
We've got a $600 billion deficit at the federal level. We've got almost $18 trillion in debt. Why we would want to raise taxes that might stunt economic growth, hurt families across New Hampshire and the country, just doesn't make economic sense to me. I think there's other ways to do this through growth and through the lease process that you can fix the transportation problem in the country.
You will not have business growth without good infrastructure, period. And that's part of the problem we're facing as a nation. Our investment in infrastructure has been declining as a proportion of GDP for years. We have to get caught up, and we've got to invest. And the business community supports that. The way we generate the revenue, I think, is open to question. There are many ways to do this. Gas tax may be one, maybe it's not one. But we have to solve the problem. And if we don't, we'll stunt business growth, and we won't get that economic development that Mr. Ginta is talking about. It simply won't happen.
Again, that's a first congressional district Republican primary debate held on WGIR Radio this week. And Dean Spiliotis, just remind us, what are the dynamics of this Republican battle for the first congressional district nomination?
Well, the candidates are vying for the right to challenge incumbent Carol Shea Porter. Frank Ginta, as we know, held that seat himself until he lost it to Carol Shea Porter, who had held the seat before him. So there's a potential for yet another rematch. And Dan Innes is new on the political scene. He has not run for political office before. As you mentioned, former UNH Business School Dean, is a gay married Republican, which is something that has gotten a fair bit of buzz nationally. It would be an interesting candidacy on that dimension alone. I'm conservative economically, although we heard him talk in that clip about the potential of a federal gas tax in order to deal with crumbling infrastructure. Hard to get a feel of this race so far. Frank Ginta is obviously better known.
Is there polling on this yet, Dean, or is it too early?
There may have been some polling. I can't recall now. MUR or UNH may have done some polling as well. My recollection was maybe Ginta was slightly ahead, or they're fairly close. It's not. Innes is sort of putting up a fairly good challenge to Ginta as kind of sort of the logical person to go against Shea Porter. It has the potential to be a very interesting primary. There is one other candidate, Brendan Kelly, I guess we should at least mention, who I think was in that debate, and he has run as a Libertarian in the past, and he's in the mix a little bit as well, though this is really about Innes and Ginta at this point. So it's shaping up to be an interesting race. Some of the polling data does show that maybe Carol Shea Porter is a little bit more vulnerable in the first CD than Annie Custer in the second CD. I think that the demographics in the first CD favor Republicans a little bit more. But Carol Shea Porter has been tenacious in the past, so we shouldn't write her out yet either.
Yeah, Kathleen, you covered this debate. What other issues jumped out? That was interesting to hear about different approaches toward transportation funding, roads and bridges and highways. What else jumped out at you from that debate?
Yeah, one interesting thing, the Patriot Act and NSA spying came up. It came up in the context of, Dan Innes basically saying that a Republican even needs to be willing to break with their party sometimes. In a case where he would have done that is not voting to reauthorize the Patriot Act, which Frank Ginta parts of the Patriot Act, which Frank Ginta did. And Dan Innes has been, very outspoken about NSA spying on citizens. You know, he talked about a Washington Post story that came out a couple weeks ago that showed that most of the data that the NSA is picking up actually comes from ordinary Americans who aren't suspected of any wrongdoing. So, he came at it that way and said that Frank Ginta, should not have, or he wouldn't have voted to reauthorize parts of the Patriot Act. And Ginta came back really strongly, actually, and I'm paraphrasing, but his response was basically, you're either with the terrorists or you're with freedom in the United States, which is a pretty strong statement to make. He wasn't directly accusing Dan Innes of being with terrorists, but it was strong. And I also thought it was interesting that his argument was you're with terrorists or you're with freedom, because a lot of people that are against this spying would argue that it actually tramples on our freedom. So I thought it was interesting the way that Frank Ginta phrased that response. Another time, They didn't necessarily break, but the moderators did try and get Frank Ginta to talk about gay marriage.
Given that
as
Dan Innes is a gay married
well,
man.
Well, given that he is, but also, you know, even without that, there have been some efforts to get what would be considered anti-gay marriage language out of the Republican platform. You know, there's been a Young Conservatives group traveling around. They came to New Hampshire. So Frank Ginta was asked, if he was elected, is that something that he would work to do to get that language out of the Republican Party platform? And he didn't answer the question. He basically said, well, I think I'm the best person to challenge Carol Shea Porter, and that's what this is really about. So completely ducked from answering the question, which was very interesting. Whereas, you know, Dan Innes just said, you know, I think he thinks that the party's views overall are changing. And I think he said in 5 years, I don't even think this is going to be something we need to talk about within the Republican Party. So definitely some differences. In these primaries, sometimes it's difficult to find differences between the candidates. But I think we saw some clear differences here between Dan Innes and Frank Ginta.
The exchange number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. By the way, it's the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. And while we're covering the news of the week, I want to remind you, Saturday's the deadline to get in on the early bird portion of NHPR's Summer Car Raffle. So get your tickets now online, NHPR.org. One more political question, and then Joanne McKenzie, I have another question for you. But Dean, last week you said you'd be out at Concord's Market Days, a three-day festival on Main Street that everybody in this area loves. But you wouldn't be looking for bargains, Dean, but for politicians. Did you find
That's
any?
That's right. Yeah, a few. Actually, as I mentioned to you earlier, I had a chance to talk with Scott Brown, who was not out strolling, shaking hands, but did show up to talk a little bit. I had a long conversation with him about foreign policy, which was something he had not really talked much about. We had mainly heard about
his opposition. So did you sort of snag him at the ice cream stand?
No, it was not that informal. It was prearranged. But there were other, you know, as you mentioned, there were, to me earlier, there were our people who live in the Concord area, this Senate seat to replace Sylvia Larson, who is retiring. The Democratic candidates in that primary were out in force. Traditionally, Market Days has been an opportunity for people to walk the street, shake hands, hand out some buttons, bumper stickers, set up you often see booths set up by the parties and by individual candidates. And it was a very busy week, great weather. Really a kind of a classic retail politics opportunity. The time when it will really be fun will be next summer, which is the summer before the New Hampshire primary. Then that's the time to really be out looking for some of the politicians to be in town.
Yeah, so you had a sit-down with Scott Brown, basically.
Yes. And, we talked about foreign policy. There was argument. There was the Guardian article a week or two ago that said he had ducked a reporter by hiding in the bathroom. He wanted to address that. Was very strong in saying that was the story was not reported accurately.
The Guardian is a British newspaper.
And the journalist had confronted him at a meal and said that he hid to get away from him. So it was interesting. I was interested to hear sort of some of his views about foreign policy in Iraq. He does have some military background. I mean, he's a retired, I think, from the reserves. It was interesting. And my sense was, having heard him in the past, has thought out a little bit more some of his positions on issues because he really needs to kind of get beyond the general Gene Shaheen is just like President Obama. Interestingly enough, I asked him about the 70%. You know, people have said that, well, he voted with President Obama 70% of the time when he was in the Senate. He kind of embraced that. I think he's really positioning himself as kind of a moderate. I mean, he has to get through the primary, but I think he's looking at the general election and saying, you know, not such a bad thing given the dynamics in New Hampshire politically.
Purple state, as we keep
exactly.
saying.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's sort of a purple position.
All right. We will talk more in just a moment. We're going to check in now with our summer car raffle.
NHPR's Exchange is here for you every day to keep you informed. The news roundup here every Friday to keep you up to date on the week's news. Anything you missed, it's here for you to make your life more interesting, and it's here thanks to listener support. I'm Sam Evans Brown. It's the early bird portion of NHPR's Summer Car Raffle. Pick up your raffle tickets now at 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org. Here's Virginia Prescott with more.
And here's what's on the table. We're giving away a Trek bike with a Yakima roof rack, a kayak, a Vermont Castings gas grill, and our grand prize, a new car from any of Gripponi's 6 dealerships. You make the choice. But when you buy your tickets right now, and only right now until noon tomorrow, you can get in on a special early bird raffle. The prize, $2,000 worth of of gas, and that's donated by Irving Oil, which could last you as much as a year. It is really two raffles for the price of one. Now, if you don't win this weekend, your name goes back into the hat for all of those other prizes. But in order to get your name into that hat, you have to buy a ticket, or as many as you'd like. 1-888-805-6477. That's before noon tomorrow, or visit nhpr.org.
As many as you like is the operative word here, because of course you can get get one raffle ticket for $50, or you can get three for $100, or you can get six raffle tickets for $200, or you can get 50 raffle tickets for some, you know, unknown amount of money. The benefits, they're here for you all year long, though, not just once the raffle's over, but you get NHPR programs that you love for the rest of the year. How about that? So get your tickets at 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org.
Just listen to the folks that are on the roundtable this week, and Laura has a rotating list of guests that she works with from time to time, people who keep their eye on New Hampshire, to bring you the news in great detail and cover a lot of different sides of an issue. And of course, you hear from the callers, so you get a sense of how people in your community are talking about it, not just amongst each other, but in public. And that's one of the reasons that you listen to New Hampshire Public Radio. NPR and NHPR take on complex issues without reducing them to little sound bites. There is a real conversation going on here, and the time and the resources needed for that come from your support. You can support NHPR today. Purchase your NHPR Summer Car raffle tickets right now. Call us at 1-888-805-6477 or get them online at nhpr.org.
Now, Virginia and I, during the break, were just trying to figure out exactly how far you could get on $2,000 worth of gas gift cards. Now, leaving from Concord, New Hampshire, you could drive all the way down through South America, through Las Cumbres in Panama, through Venezuela, over into Brazil, following the coast down Montevideo, hit Buenos Aires, and just about there is where you'd run out of gas. So think about that. Think about how epic of a road trip that would be.
We do not recommend our route.
Yeah, our route is a little circuitous and maybe did not follow real roads in some places. But you could get there with the right automobile and with the $2,000 in Irving Oil gas gift cards that you will win if you're the lucky winner for our early bird drawing in the summer car raffle. 1-888-805-6477 is the number to call, or nhpr.org is the website.
Supporting NHPR today is one of the best things that you could do with just 2 minutes of your time. You just provide your name, your contact information, your credit card, and tell us how many raffle tickets you'd like to buy. Of course, the more you buy, the better your chances. And just consider, this is not a huge state. Your chances are pretty good that your name could get drawn. And of course, if you don't win this week, it could go in for next week's grand prize of a new car and all of the other prizes. But you need to put your name into the hat to win. It just takes 2 minutes. Call us at 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org.
And of course, if you don't win, you still know that your money is going to support the great programming that you listen to every day, the programming that you love, that you appreciate, that keeps you informed, that enriches your life. And of course, it just takes 2 minutes of your time. We just need your name, your contact information, how many raffle tickets you want to buy, and of course, how you'd like to pay, and then your name is in the hat for those prizes. So call in now, 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org, and good luck.
New Hampshire weather mostly sunny for today, with some isolated showers this afternoon likely in northern Coos County. High temperatures mid-70s north, ranging mid-80s in the south. Mostly clear tonight, some areas of fog after midnight, lows around 50 for the north country, mid-50s, lower 60s in the rest of the state. It'll be partly to mostly sunny tomorrow, with highs upper 70s to mid-80s, and showers and thunderstorms likely on Sunday. It'll be humid, high temperatures mid-70s to lower 80s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Help South Rehabilitation Hospital in Concord, helping individuals return to active, independent lives through comprehensive medical rehabilitation services, HealthSouthConcord.com. And Country Woods Furniture, Raymond, where summertime is celebration time, store-wide with upholstery by Best Home Furnishing, Beauty Rest mattresses, and solid wood furniture for every room. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. And in this segment of the show, we've actually got some good news to report to you. Several stories that resolved happily this week, including one New Hampshire town being recognized as one of the 10 best small towns in America. If you can guess which one, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. But Joanne McKenzie with the Eagle Tribune and the Derry News, back to you for another happy ending story. Abigail Hernandez, a girl, teenage girl, missing for 9 months, is back with her family in North Conway. This is a wonderful story because you always imagine the worst when children go missing. What's the community response been, Joanne?
Well, it is a wonderful story. She's back home and apparently safe. But what I found interesting about this is the community response first was elation that she was home and safe. But there are lots of people have lots of questions about where she's been, who she might have been with, how she left, how she returned. And it's gotten almost nasty. We're a site dedicated to finding her was shut. Conversation was shut down there because there was too much speculation and too much suggestion that people have a right to know where Abigail has been for 9 months. The Attorney General's office has been very clear that this is an ongoing investigation. Criminal charges could come out of this. She was 14 years old when she disappeared, so it's unlikely that she did this on her own or was on her own for 9 months. And, you know, I think it just calls into question people who said they volunteered their time and in some cases money to help search for her, whether you're motivated to bring a young missing person home, and it stops there. The family certainly deserves some privacy after almost a year of unimaginable hell for them. And again, the police and the Attorney General's office are correct in saying we need to be careful about this and not jeopardize any potential criminal case coming forward.
So people feeling, Joanne, that they spent time and money helping with the search and now they want answers, but the AG saying, look, you know, first of all, there's still an investigation. Also, this is a family matter. And she's a minor, Joanne, so that
she
changes things,
is.
Too. Yeah.
And you know, today we're also looking at the three-year anniversary of the death of Selena Cass, who was 11 years old when she disappeared from her family home, and then her body was later found, and no one's been charged in her murder up in West Stewartstown. So maybe that's a sad reminder that people ought to be just grateful that Abigail is home and safe.
Yeah, no, it's worth remembering that story, and our hearts just break for Selena's family. Dean, did you want to quick jump in
there?
Yeah,
I mean, obviously it's a happy ending, but it's been fascinating to me to watch in these kinds of situations how quickly public goodwill tends to wear out. People obviously want more of an explanation, and it was interesting. You know, they released this sketch last night of an adult male who according to the Attorney General's office, drove away with Abigail. It's interesting the very specific language they used. You know, drove away. You know, was she abducted? Did she get in the car willingly? We don't know what drove away meant. So either the Attorney General's office knows more than they're releasing, or they're not getting the kind of cooperation they want. We don't know. My guess is we'll find out at some point, but at least she is home.
Well, and another positive story, and heartening in a week when there's been so much terrible international news, planes going down and wars and so forth. But this week, a Manchester woman originally from Sudan named Miriam Ibrahim was freed. Dean, not only freed, released from a death sentence, she even met with the Pope. I mean, it just doesn't get bigger than that.
Yes, yeah, so Miriam Ibrahim was a Sudanese woman who had been sentenced to death for apostasy for being Christian and not being willing to renounce her Christianity and to become Muslim as required by Islamic law in the Sudan. She'd been in jail. She gave birth while she was in jail. She was her death sentence was overturned by the highest court there, and then she ran into trouble leaving the country and took refuge at the American embassy or one of the embassies in Sudan. Italian diplomats were able to free her, working with other parties, came to Italy. We saw these great photos of her family, and they met with the Pope. They had a half-hour meeting with the Pope. So it seems like a happy ending there, and I guess they're on their way back to the United States at some point soon.
And again, Daniel Wani, her husband, is the Manchester man.
Yes.
And they hope to rebuild and start their life with their two very young daughters in Manchester. So it's kind of a cool story. Come home to New Hampshire. Another political story that we didn't have time to follow up on earlier, and I'll throw this to you, Kathleen. The American Civil Liberties Union has taken on a case concerning third-party candidates. Now, what's going on there?
Yeah, so it's the New Hampshire chapter of the Civil Liberties Union. They filed a case on behalf of the Libertarian Party of New Hampshire, and it has to do with how third parties get on the ballot. So obviously, Republican, Democrat, always on the ballot every election. They can have a full slate of candidates. But if you are a third party and you want to get on the ballot, there's one of two ways you can do that. One of your candidates for, I think it's governor or president, has to get 4% of the votes in the previous election. So then you're automatically a recognized party in the next election. You can have primaries.
You don't have to collect signatures.
A full slate of candidates. No signatures. Or the other way that you can do it is you can collect signatures, and those signatures have to be equal to 3% of the vote count in the previous election. So the Libertarian Party has been successful in doing this before. It's more than 20,000 signatures that they've needed to do it. But in 2000 and 2012, they were successful in collecting these signatures. And there was a law change this year. There used to be no time limit on when you could get the signatures. But kind of as what the Secretary of State's office asked for as a housekeeping measure, they changed the law this year and said you have to get all the signatures in the year of the election. So the Civil Liberties Union is suing basically and saying this isn't going to give people enough time to collect all of those signatures and still be able to dedicate resources to campaigning, getting their message out, getting out the vote. In the past, when they did get on the ballot in 2012, they said they started collecting those signatures in 2011. So they're challenging this and saying that it's putting up this unnecessary hurdle for third-party access to the ballot, which they say, you know, is crucial to give voters choices. To give people access to as many candidates as possible. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. There was a similar challenge in Rhode Island in federal court. And I believe what was found in that case was that the state really had no compelling justification for putting a time limit, a January 1 time limit. So there's a little bit of precedent around this. So we'll see if the state's able to produce anything compelling enough to, you know, make the court believe that this time limit is necessary.
Well, it's interesting. And in this season leading up to the primary, September 9th, we've been so focused on primary this and primary that, it's good to hear that, you know, there's third-party candidates and they're angling to participate.
Yeah, they're right now, the Libertarian Party, they were not trying to collect signatures for the 2014 election. They're waiting for the 2016 presidential. So it's not an issue for them this election cycle, but it will be in 2016.
All right. And by the way, a moment ago I misspoke. I said that Daniel Wani and his wife Miriam had two daughters. They have a daughter and a son. So I want to clear that up. I also want to say congratulations to Dean Spiliotis. The town of Lebanon, New Hampshire, named a top 10 small town by livability.com. This is an annual list ranking America's top small towns. They looked at cities, towns with populations under 20,000, looked at everything like cost of living, healthcare spending, diversity, adult obesity, crime, civic engagement, air quality, natural amenities, just to name a few. And Lebanon came out on top. Not number one, but way up there. What do you think? You used to live in that area.
Yeah, I actually lived in West Lebanon for a number of years. And even back then, it was regularly appearing on these, you know, top 20 small towns around the country. It's a lovely town center. It's close to Dartmouth-Hitchcock and all of that whole technology corridor that has developed on 120 around the Sentara Office Park. It's kind of a nice mix of small town and bigger economic opportunity. The whole time I've been in the state, it always pops up on these sort of great small towns that you might not know about.
All right. Well, next week on The Exchange, we're going to begin the week with a look back at World War I. Lots of retrospectives this year, given that it's the 100th anniversary of the war. Also, later in the week, we're going to look into the gluten-free trend that's sweeping America, why so many folks are giving up their daily bread. That's what we're up to. Joanne McKenzie, how about you? What are you following next week?
We'll be following up on Market Basket, whatever happens today or doesn't happen. We also have former Dairy Town Administrator John Anderson finally coming to trial next week for lewd and lascivious conduct, which ultimately cost him his job.
Wow. Big deal next week. And we will all be watching that Market Basket story. How about you, Kathleen?
As I say every week now, I'm going to be looking at the elections, following what's happening in the U.S. Senate race, the governor's race. As we, you know, get into August, people will probably start paying attention a little bit more. So seeing what happens and continuing to follow these primaries.
Well, it's about 6 weeks away. It's not that far. So, yep. Dean, how about you?
In the same boat as Kathleen, it's the political season. We're under 2 months to the primaries on September 9th. A lot of interesting stuff going on. So I'm going to be right there, too.
Oh, and by the way, I want to let everybody know, Dean is going to put a link up on his website to that one-on-one interview he had with Scott Brown. So if you want to hear it, check out Dean's website a little bit later, nhpoliticalcapital.com. Thanks, all of you. Let's check in very quickly now with our summer car raffle.
Whatever Laura's guests are going to be following this next week, they will bring it to you. And that's why you listen to New Hampshire Public Radio. You want news you can trust. You want to learn new things about the world, about science and culture and politics. So you listen to New Hampshire Public Radio. We bring it all to you through the generosity of our listener supporters. Virginia Prescott here. It is the early bird portion of NHPR Summer Car Raffle. You can pick up your tickets now, and we do mean now. It's your last chance during the exchange for the early bird portion. Call us at 1-888-805-6477 or go to nhpr.org. Here's Sam Evans-Brown with more.
And if you haven't deduced this already, we are in fact raffling off a car in this summer car raffle, but we're leaving it up to you to decide what kind of car you want to drive away with. And it could, of course, be you when you get your raffle tickets. You'll be able to pick up your car from any of Grapponi Automotive Group's six dealerships. That's Ford, Honda, Hyundai, Mazda, Scion, and Toyota. And that will happen next week when you get your $50 ticket today. But you could also win the $2,000 in gas gift cards donated by Irving Oil, which we are drawing for tomorrow. So call in 1-888-805-6477 to get your chance or chances to win, or visit nhpr.org.
Getting a summer car raffle ticket is a rite of passage in the summer for many NHPR listeners. So if it's on your to-do list, please do it now. It really is quite easy. It takes just 2 minutes. And then you can tackle the rest of this day and all of the things on your list, knowing that you have done your part to keep NHPR on the air and available to everybody. You can get your tickets at 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org.
Something that's unique to radio that other news sources can't really claim is that we can make other times of your day that wouldn't otherwise be productive while you're driving your car, while you're washing the dishes. You can sit and listen to NHPR. You can learn about the most important news of the day, national news, international news, local news, and you can do that. You can hear it. It's top quality programming all the time. Morning Edition, All Things Considered, Marketplace, all while you're getting other stuff done. You can't claim that for any other source of news. So support NHPR today. Support that sort of productivity boosting quality of radio. Call in 1-888-805-6477 or go online to nhpr.org.
In less than 2 minutes, you're going to be going back to our regular programming, and you'll be hearing the Diane Rehm Show First Hour, which is the National News Roundtable. We go from the local to the national to the international on Fridays, filling you in on everything. Pretty productive, and take 2 minutes to do something really productive for NHPR and ensure that the programs that you value stay on the radio. You can support the programs you rely on by purchasing your NHPR Summer Car Raffle tickets right now. Call us at 1-888-805-6477 or get your tickets online at nhpr.org.
I don't know about you all, but every time I have to fill up my gas tank, it is painful. It is a painful experience. $30, $40, even $50 for a full tank of gas, it is just brutal. So this early bird prize for our summer car raffle, that will help ease that pinch. $2,000 in gas gift cards, it'll go a long way. As we were saying earlier in the summer, or earlier in this hour, it'll take you all the way down to South America through some gorgeous, gorgeous sights. So you could be our next winner, but you have to get a raffle ticket to be in it. They're just $50 each or three for $100. Call in 1-888-805-6477 or at nhpr.org.
Well, just calculating that trip was difficult, so taking that trip would not be easy, but getting your raffle tickets is. Whether you want one for $50, three for $100, it takes only 2 minutes of your time, and the benefits are going to be here for you all year long in the form of programs like the Diane Rehm Show and the Friday News Roundup and all the NHPR programs you love. Get your tickets, 1-888-805-6477. 6477 or at nhpr.org. You can get them online, nhpr.org. Someone's going to win this. Why not let it be you?
Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and from Vineyard Brands Importers and Mohua Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand's Marlboro Vineyards. Now available at New Hampshire State Liquor Stores, vineyardbrands.com. And from Centrix Bank, see beyond with Centrix Bank, customized business banking for businesses, professionals, municipalities, and non-for-profit organizations, online at centrixbank.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. Fighting continues between Israel and Palestinian militants in Gaza. Palestinian health officials say 826 Palestinians have died in more than 2 weeks of violence, and more than 5,200 have been injured. 33 Israeli soldiers have been killed and 3 civilians, one of whom was a citizen from Thailand. The BBC's John Donison is in Jerusalem, where he says the situation is tense.
In Jerusalem's Old City, there's been a huge Israeli security operation around Muslim Friday prayers. It follows a night of violence in the West Bank. Outside Ramallah, more than 10,000 Palestinians march towards Jerusalem and clash with Israeli soldiers. There is much anger here among Palestinians about the mounting casualties in Gaza. In Cairo, the U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is said to be pushing for a short humanitarian truce of up to 10 days to start at the weekend to coincide with the start of the Muslim holiday of Eid.
The BBC's John Donison. French troops have arrived at the wreckage of an Algerian jet. It went down in stormy weather yesterday in the West African country of Mali. 116 people were aboard, about half of them French citizens. French President François Hollande, speaking through a BBC interpreter, says French officials are waiting for information in the northern Malian city of Gao.
Les soldats français qui sont déjà